If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe at lifebetweenthevines.com.
I have never produced a vintage that I think is bad wine. They're just different.
We are farmers, and in order for us to make it, we have to be able to sell the products that we produce.
For better or for worse, I've learned by usually making mistakes and then just trying not to make them a second time.
So for us, you know, the central thing is the fruit, and it's what's given by the vineyard.
It all starts in the vineyard, as we've all heard that, right?
So drink a lot and drink well. That would be my advice.
We say, so drink the wine. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 399. This week we feature Chuck Klimek, home winemaker from Franksville, Wisconsin. What happens when you connect winemaking with horse manure? Well, this interview. Chuck Klimek is a home wine grape grower and winemaker in Franksville, Wisconsin. Conveniently, he lives just about 1 mile from my home, and I happen to live on a horse ranch. Chuck has been using much of our manure, which does tend to stack up, for use at his property, where he and his wife grow all kinds of tasty fruit and vegetables. And that's how we met. It's worth noting that Chuck is the first home wine grower we've interviewed for this project. And if there is one word in common to many of our podcasts, it is passion. You can also hear Chuck on our Vino Lingo segment defining the term top wire cordon. Well, it's been about 5 months since we have interviewed somebody in the flesh and in person, which is great. I'm here with Chuck Klimek. Chuck is a home winemaker and grower. How are you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing well today, Ray.
It's good to see you. Thank you for having us over today.
Glad to have you out.
It's been obviously difficult for everybody in this climate with COVID and not necessarily being able to be social. So it's fun to be back talking with a winemaker. So let's talk about you and wine. I guess I want to go back to the beginning for you. How long have you been making wine to start with?
I've been making wine since 2007. I actually had an interest for a long time. About 1970, I had an uncle that started making wine. He and my mother were growing Concord grapes, which mostly went for jelly. And my uncle started making wine. Unfortunately, he got sick right after that, passed away, and I never was able to taste any of that wine. And then about 10 years later, an elderly gentleman who was actually a co-worker of my father, and I knew this man my whole life, came from Hungary, had always made wine, home wine apparently. It was brought up that way. His family always did that. Came here as an adult after World War II when communism came to Hungary, and started here, made a life for himself, eventually worked his way up to buying a property, growing things as he had done in Europe. Grapes and other fruits were part of that. And I tasted his wine in 1981, and it was good. It was a dry white wine. I really knew nothing about wine at that time. I drank a little bit of it, but really just didn't know that much about it at all. Always been a do-it-yourselfer, and I thought, I want to do this someday. I'm already growing fruits. And for whatever reason, younger, just too bashful, didn't ask him about it at all. And I continued to see this man from time to time. And about in 2006, he came over to my house. He actually didn't live too far from where we currently live. Just stopped in for a visit. And he said, I would like to teach you how to make wine. Would you like to learn?
Really?
And I'm like, you have no idea. I had actually went through a large period of my life where I was very busy with work and I had just stopped drinking. I wasn't an alcoholic. I just thought, I got to focus on my work. I'm too busy. I don't have time for that. And I had started drinking a little bit of wine around the time when this gentleman made the offer to me. So he took me through the process of making each type of wine that he was making at home. He had probably 8 different types of wine from various fruits, everything from raspberries to pears, white grapes, red currants, and a few other minor fruits. And he just patiently showed me in his operation there how he did each one, the whole process there. And he was just I could tell he was just pleased with showing me how to do something, how to share something with me. And like I said, being a big do-it-yourselfer, that's what really appealed to me, I guess, more than the wine itself. I didn't go into it with a huge love for wine. I was not this large wine drinker, but I fell in love with the process, actually. And shortly after that, within a year after I started making that first batch, I found out about the Wisconsin Vintners Association, a association of largely home winemakers based in the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area. Attended one meeting as a guest upon the recommendation of somebody at a wine supply shop in the Milwaukee area. I was asked that night at that first meeting, what do you think of this? I said, I want to join. And so I joined a month later and gradually got to know more people there. Started listening to what they were talking about. We would have a topic every month at our monthly membership meetings with speakers, which could have been home winemakers or in some cases were professional people, actually. After a few years of that, I got on the board of directors there. And just to learn more about the organization, to get involved a little bit, I'm a firm believer that everybody should serve and everybody can do something, can contribute something. And once I was on the board, I realized I was in a group of people who not only were very passionate about making wine, but they also wanted to serve this organization. And they were so passionate that I learned a lot from them. We met at each other's homes for the board meetings. And after the business meeting, a social hour happened where you got to taste some of the other people's wines, basically the host's wines, and talk. And the talking, that's where the real learning takes place. Somebody's showing how they do something. Here, take a little taste of this. See what I did with this wine here. And I just kept learning more and more, not only about winemaking, but appreciation for wine and all the different types of wine. I started looking on the internet, bought all kinds of books about winemaking, and it continues today.
Chuck, you told me you're retired, so what did you do for a profession?
I was an urban forestry manager. I was the city forester for the city of Racine for over 3 decades. And so my work and my professional education was the management of the urban forest, dealing with trees, shrubs, and vines, largely ornamental vines. The vine end of it wasn't too big in the municipality that I worked with. And as I mentioned, my wife and I have been growing fruits and vegetables for many, many years. And that's why when I got into winemaking, the grape growing seemed like a natural offshoot because grapes are woody plants. It's a little different than growing trees, but the principles of how the plant works is basically the same, although the management is quite a bit different. And of course, we're trying to produce crops off of grapes, where my end of the tree care industry was largely preserving and managing shade trees.
Nice. Well, that does seem like a logical move to go into wine. So how many years now, as of this is 2020, the year we won't forget, have you been growing grapes and making wine?
I've been making wine 13 years, and grape growing actually goes back to, well, as I said, in the late 60s, early 70s. My mother and my uncle growing the Concord grapes, and once my wife Debbie and I bought our first property out in the country, I planted grapevines there, but those were table grapes. And those were for juice and for jelly. No winemaking at that particular time. That was 35 years ago. So I've been growing grapes on and off for 35 years, but seriously, wine grapes for about 12, 13 years.
And it's nice you've seen both sides of it, going from table grapes to making wine. Let's talk about the grapes you're growing to make wine. Now, I'm going to stop myself right there. I'm going to go back a little bit. I want to make one thing clear to our listeners so they know where we are, because we haven't mentioned that. Obviously, we're in Wisconsin. And are you legitimately in Franksville, or are you in Mount Pleasant? I get a little confused here.
Franksville, I guess, was the original settlement here, named after the Frank's Pure Food Company, which is part of a mile down the road from our property here, where they made the famous Frank's sauerkraut, the green cans you still see in the grocery store. They moved the production to another state, but the buildings are still there. A lot of cabbage is still growing here. Technically, nowadays, The municipality is named Mount Pleasant, but there still is a Franksville post office, and our postal address is Franksville, Wisconsin, southeast Wisconsin. So we have winter here. It gets cold here.
Oh, yeah, it definitely does. And I'm assuming, obviously, what you're growing is cold-weather grapes. So let's talk about the varieties you're growing here.
Correct. I did start out with some table grapes here, too, and some other wine grapes that are not reliably hardy in this climate here. I have since removed all those, and I've replaced them with cold hardy grapes. The two types of grapes I have at this particular time are Frontenac Blanc. It's a white grape. It was developed by the University of Minnesota. Very cold hardy, down into the minus 30 below. And the other variety is a little newer. It's called Petite Pearl red grape. That was developed by a gentleman named Tom Plocker. He is a Minnesota grape breeder. I believe he was an engineer originally, but he's been a hobbyist breeder for a lot of years and now is doing that full time and has developed successfully a number of cold hardy grapes.
Nice. And to be clear again for our listeners, you're making these pretty much for yourself and friends. You're not selling your wine.
Correct. Yeah, totally for home consumption.
And this is great because you are our first home wine grower we've interviewed in a number of people. So it's really a lot of fun. But like any professional, it's a lot of hard work, especially when you're dealing with it in this weather. I mean, you've got all kinds of challenges. I don't even want to think about pruning around here. I mean, it's got to be rough, even in any size vineyard.
There's a lot of maintenance, definitely a lot more than even somebody that thinks they know what they're doing gets into when sometimes a budding, aspiring grape grower asked me about it. I says, I'm not sure if I would do it over again. I said, it is a lot of work. It's a commitment. We have a very full life already. But year-round, you are doing something with those vines. Go back to January 2019, the polar vortex here, 20-some, 30-some below, whatever it was. I was up at the grape grower conference, actually, in January when that cold weather was happening back home here. We had a lot of damage to the vines throughout the state, probably throughout the Midwest. To both of the varieties that I'm growing here, there was a lot of damage, and it wasn't just tender buds. It was wood that was damaged, that was killed. So a lot of damaged tissue had to be removed from those vines because it was not going to live. And that severely impacted production, took a big hit in production last year. Last year was a very small crop because of that. But that's farming. That's growing things.
So if you're doing that, and this is my ignorant question about the vines themselves, to save them, then are you simply grafting them after that point, or do you have to pull the vine when you have this kind of damage?
Not grafting at all. Generally pruning off the damaged part, sometimes trying to retrain new canes. In other cases, you are removing the whole vine. The damage may be so severe that it's totally dead, or if it's above a given percentage, it's too much damage, and maybe you can't afford to leave that behind and hope for the best with it. The best thing is to start over, but then, of course, you're starting over, so you're 3-4 years down the road before you'll have a productive vine there again that'll start producing, actually.
Sure. That's the joys of being a winemaker, is waiting for that to happen.
It's all about time. It's definitely time. Growing things is time, no matter what kind of crop.
Well, and I'm curious now, as you, I'm sure you remember, just a few, what was it, 3 weeks ago, we had a major storm that hit Iowa that was basically gigundous wind shear that came through here and at the property we're at. And I should tell our listeners that we live very close by. And did you have any damage to any of your vines at all from that? Because that was pretty severe.
Nothing permanent. A number of the canes, I grow them on what they call a top wire system. I have the canes trained to the top wire of the trellis, so they're up in the sun and generally do better. Some of them were blown and disrupted from that top wire and actually came down. And unfortunately, they have the crop on them right now, so there's a lot of weight there. And of course, in full leaf, a lot of wind resistance. So that did take some of them down. Some of them I was able to get back up there, some of them I was not, because I didn't want to manipulate the vines too much and break and damage tissue on the vines this close to harvest time.
Sure, unfortunately close to harvest, yeah. I think the one thing I love about winemakers is that you all have the spirit of sharing information. And we were talking about associations a little while ago, and you were starting to make reference to the Wisconsin Grape Growers Association, is that correct?
Yeah.
And I got to believe when you guys get together, all due respect, you're a bunch of geeks, all sharing this stuff. And I'm sure you leave some of these meetings kind of like, man, I can't wait to get back to it. Always relights your fire, doesn't it?
You better believe it. The Wisconsin Grape Growers Association is part of a larger conference that takes place annually in January in Wisconsin Dells. I have been at the Wilderness recently. We've been at the Kalahari. They're the biggest venue we can find to fit over 600 people. I don't really know what the number was this year, but it's teamed up with the Wisconsin Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Conference, which has berry growers, vegetable growers, the Wisconsin Winery Association. There's a hospitality side of the industry with restaurants and hotels. And they realize the value in all of these associations meeting at one time, because many of their crafts cross paths in a number of ways. But there is so much information being shared there. We're listening to professors and industry professionals speaking during the day. And in the evenings, there's breakout rooms in the hotel where there's specialty groups talking about grape growing, about winemaking, about berry growing. And it could be anything from the challenges of the pests and the weather, or the chemistry and techniques about the winemaking. And they definitely are all just regular people interested in what they're doing and passionate about how the paths do cross in all those separate disciplines, actually.
I'm sure you've made a lot of friends across the state, too. Again, people you're sharing ideas with, or just sharing fun.
Yeah, and there's no distinction between small home winemaker and large commercial grape grower, winemaker. They're all very passionate about what they're doing, and everybody is just a regular person and happy to share information and made some good friendships and have learned so much from those people and just all the networking that takes place there.
Are you familiar with Parallel 44 Winery up in Kewaunee?
Yes, I am. Steve Johnson.
Yeah,
yes.
Steve's a great guy. We've interviewed him a number of times over the years.
Yep, sharp guy. Great operation, yeah.
One thing Steve told me is when he makes a particular variety, becomes very popular with people, and he sells out, people get upset. And I wonder, do you run into that when you give some of your wine away? People are saying, hey, Chuck, come on, where is it? Come on.
I do have that, and some people don't understand that it's different from year to year. They go, well, you're using the same grapes, right? You've got a recipe you follow, don't you?
Ooh, that word.
And I don't like to look at it as a recipe. It's a protocol that you develop based on the individual chemistry of the particular fruit that you're dealing with, and it is different every year. The sugar level is different, the pH is different, the titratable acidity is different. So the flavor profile can vary from year to year for any winemaker.
Interesting. And about how much wine are you making?
I kind of go by gallons, and it could be 40 to 80. We're allowed to make 100 gallons per person, 200 gallons per family. And it varies on the size of the crop.
Which produces about how many bottles?
Five bottles per gallon, basically.
Right. Just gives me kind of an idea.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't get into the bottle thing as much as some guys do. Well, cases. A lot of guys do look at it that way. Guys, people, professionals always talk about cases.
Well, I want to go back to the group. I believe it was the Vintners Association. You talk about some of you do bring in grapes so you can make wine from different parts of the country or different parts of the world.
Yes, we do group purchases. This year has been hindered quite a bit because of COVID-19, but we have brought in grapes and juice from South America, from Chile. Chile is a very large grape-growing country, and their wines and their grapes and juices are sold around the world, actually. We also, the Vintners Association, will bring in grapes and white juices from other parts of the United States, Washington State, Oregon, California, sometimes New York, the Finger Lakes area, parts of Pennsylvania, actually are large grape growing areas. So we make these group purchases and offer them to our members, people that want to use that don't have their own fruit or want to make wine from grapes that cannot be grown around here.
That's smart to be able to do something like that. So you're doing that in addition to what you grow here?
Yes, I am.
Wow. So
you're kind of able to get around, aren't you?
Yeah, some of those wines, I will make them as that varietal, just that single varietal. Sometimes I will blend my cold hardy grape wines with wines that I've made from California, for instance, or from Chile, to create a different wine.
Now, this is, again, probably falling into the category of the dumb question, but as a home grower, you know, my first assumption would be weather, but what do you see as your greatest challenge?
I would say weather probably is. It is highly variable. I'm optimistic about this year's harvest. We've had a lot of warm weather this year, and even though I'm growing cold hardy grapes, we still need a lot of sunshine, some warm temperature to bring the sugar levels up and the titratable acidity levels down. The past few years, 17, 18, and 19 were a lot cooler. We had long, cool springs, especially last spring, very cool, shady, rainy spring, and then a lot of rain in the fall. It was diluting the sugars in the wine, or in the grapes, I should say, which ultimately became wine. Not a good year for most of my fellow grape growers around here, too, because of that, but we have no control over the weather.
Do you get a chance to travel around, visit any of these wineries we're talking about, some of these fellow grape growers?
I strictly travel around Wisconsin. Yes, I have visited a number of vineyards and wineries in Wisconsin.
There's a fair amount of grape growers here. How big is this association?
The Wisconsin Vintners Association is 135 memberships. A membership includes not only the individual that signed up for it, but a significant other, a spouse. So we're really at well over 200 people that are members of that association. We are the largest amateur winemaking association in the country, and we are the second oldest. We go back to 1970.
Wow, that's an interesting period, too, just before everything broke in California.
Yeah, this year, 2020, is actually the 50th anniversary of the Wisconsin Vintners Association. We were intending to have a gala celebration this year, but with the virus, that's been canceled, put on hold. Not sure when in the future it's going to happen, actually.
Yeah, a lot of gala celebrations have been canceled. You had casually mentioned something about philanthropy and the Wisconsin Vintners Association. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
We've started over 5 years ago. We have an annual gala event, like a ball, basically, a big dinner, a dinner dance, where nothing but homemade wines are shared there at a big hotel in the Milwaukee area, and a nice meal, catered meal, of course. And we have a fundraiser there. That's the only fundraiser we have. And the proceeds from that fundraiser have been used to help the Wisconsin wine industry, which of course is not as large as the wine industry in other parts of the world, other states of this country. And we have donated thousands of dollars to the University of Wisconsin. We help fund the bringing in of a professional fermentation specialist, an enologist, a person trained with a doctorate degree in fermentation sciences. And he, in addition to winemaking, he also has a responsibility in beer brewing, cheese making, which is very big in Wisconsin, cider, which is, of course, also a fermented beverage. We've donated to that, and also that's based at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee does not have an enology program. They have a geology program, and one of the geology professors there has an interest in terroir, which is the sense of place, the soils in which grapes are growing. It's spoke a lot about in France. They always talk about their terroir there, and that's why they believe they have just wonderful wines there. And of course, soils are important for growing grapes as well as they are for growing anything. And so they've had this ongoing offshoot program of measuring soils in various areas around Wisconsin, mainly in vineyards, and we've donated at least $15,000 to equipment for that program.
Very nice. Good for you guys. That's great to reinvest in the future here in Wisconsin.
Yes, even though we are small-scale home winemakers, we are very passionate about helping to grow Wisconsin's wine industry. We're trying to support the professional associations here, the Wisconsin Winery Association, which the commercial winemakers are members of. I am not. The home winemakers cannot be members of that. And then the Wisconsin Grape Growers Association, which is largely commercial grape growing vineyards, but they do allow small-scale amateur grape growers to be members of that too. And we want to support their efforts because what's good for them is good for everybody here in the Wisconsin wine industry. We want other people to know that there is a wine industry in Wisconsin, and it's growing.
What makes you crazy about the wine business on your side of it as a home grower?
I appreciate all types of wine nowadays. I know many people have their favorites. They absolutely will only drink German whites or dry reds or something sweet and fruity. I started out making fruit wines because I was growing fruits. And as I got to learn more about the grapes, I got a lot of appreciation for grape wines. So appreciate the wines, but I really appreciate the process. I think I just fell in love with, I'm just passionate about the whole process. And in spite of all the work that happens with growing the grapes and getting ready, and it comes at a frantic pace when it's harvest season, all of a sudden it's here. You can't put it on hold. It's going to happen. And it's all hands on deck. But I do look forward to it every year, and then in anticipation of however that wine is going to turn out this year, what the chemistry is going to bring us, and what kind of aroma and flavor profiles are going to come out of this year's crop.
And you should be, what are you, did you say you're about a month away from harvest for this part of the country?
Maybe a week away with the white grapes, actually.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because it obviously is very different everywhere you go. As I said before, we're at your home, and the vineyard is right, really just off camera here. In the wine business, you're taken away during harvest. Your life turns into nothing but grapes. So you're doing everything pretty much here then, or?
Yes, yeah, the crush pad starts outside. Fermentation moves into an outdoor building, which does have heat and water if it is needed out there. Once the primary fermentation takes place, once the red goes through what they call the secondary or malolactic fermentation or conversion, then it does move into the cellar of the home, and all the white wine work does take place in the cellar because the temperature is cooler there, and you need cooler temperatures for fermentation of the white wines.
So since you started doing this, you know, I like to ask winemakers, have you had, you know, a crazy episode, something that happened where you're like, wow, I can't believe I did that. Many of us know dealing with wine occasionally it can come back in your face in a fermentation process, and just any thought you have on that.
I've had a few pop corks in the wine cellar. When I first started, before I knew about stabilization and before I got into the association, I actually did sweeten a wine and didn't realize I had to stable that wine a little bit. I back sweetened it, added a little sugar to deal with the high acidity. And I walked into that cellar a few weeks later and I'm like, what is that cork doing on the floor over there? It shouldn't be there. And then I found a few more. Fortunately, I didn't have an explosion, didn't have a bunch of broken bottles, didn't have a mess all over the place. And there again, knowledge is everything. You definitely learn from experience, and you gotta ask yourself, what caused this? And what are the possible solutions? What's the best solution? And talk to other people too. And I found that winemakers, and besides being so passionate about the crafting of the wine, they're happy to share information about questions you may have. Have you ever seen this? Has this ever happened to you?
Yeah, that's the great thing about the business. I'm curious, in your cellar of your own wines, what's your oldest vintage that you have hung on to see how what potential for aging there might be?
I've got a six-year-old wine down there right now. That is my oldest, actually made from Chilean grapes. And just there's two bottles left, I think, of it down there. Just had a bottle of it recently, and surprisingly, I thought it was still pretty good considering my skills were not back then what they are now. I'm learning all the time. As I always tell people, you learn something from every batch. And that's one reason I like to try new fruits, different kinds of grapes that I've never made before. Sometimes from a grape, I don't even care for the wine from that. And by the time that batch is completed in the bottle, sat in the bottle for a while, once you open it, you learn something from tasting that wine.
What are some of the grapes you're talking about that you've brought in from other places that you've experimented with?
Brought in a lot of whites, Riesling, Gewürztraminer, a personal favorite of mine, Viognier, made that for the first time this past year, actually a very lovely wine from Washington State, the source of the grapes. California grapes, Zinfandel, Petite Syrah, of course, some Chardonnay, Chile, part of the group used to routinely make a purchase from South America every year of Chilean grapes from a given region there, basically all the Bordeaux varieties. And I've tried each and every one of those as single varietals and also did some blending too. Made some interesting wines, learned a lot about red winemaking from those Chilean grapes. Currently, nobody in our group is bringing in from Chile. The logistics are kind of difficult, and of course, they do have to come a long way. They come all the way up through the Panama Canal, and they spend a lot of time in that shipping container, from what I understand, before they come up the eastern seaboard and then have to be trucked across the country to the Midwest. So there's been some challenges with it. At this time, nobody is really interested in bringing grapes that far.
It's amazing to think of that challenge.
It is. It's unbelievable, really.
Yeah. So what do you like to drink?
Probably my personal favorites are the dry reds. But as I mentioned earlier, I do have appreciation for many. There are a lot of whites I like, too. I've been enjoying the Frontenac Blanc, actually, recently with the very warm weather we've had here this past week. Normally, I would be drinking some red wine every evening, probably. I haven't touched a red for about a week now because of the hot weather we've had until today. And a slightly chilled white has gone down so well. And the Frontenac Blanc, I've been blending that, as I mentioned, with some of the whites from, for instance, Washington State. Works out very well.
Nice. Do you have any type of a tasting group that you're involved with, whether they be from the association or just a group of friends, just to sort of see what other wines are like or where things are going?
There are some individual amateur winemakers that I have close relationships with that we do trade wines. Unfortunately, a lot of it's logistics. We're based in the Milwaukee area and all over southeast Wisconsin, though, into central Wisconsin, into northern Illinois. All of us live quite a distance from each other, so unfortunately, I can't walk next door and quickly tap somebody's palate there. Our association was having monthly in-person membership meetings, it was so nice there because we got to do a lot of talking and some tasting of each other's wines. We are, of course, still doing things on Zoom and emailing and texting and phone calls, but it's severely limited our tasting abilities.
Sure, definitely cramped right now these days.
Yeah, we've had a little bit of some virtual tastings where you can sit at your own home and have that glass of wine in front of you and be talking via the computer, somebody 40 miles away that's tasting the same wine, but not quite the same.
So when you do a tasting like this, I'm a little curious. You're a creative guy because you are making wine. And there is, many people of course say, there's art involved in this. But when you're doing a tasting like that, whether it be in person or whether it be in Zoom, and somebody's tasting your wine, do you bite your nails a little bit and sit back going, I was really happy with that, but I'm, what is it? You know, do you get a little concerned about how that's going to go down?
I think so. I think it's only natural. I mean, I'm beyond the concern about being shamed about a wine, and hopefully the wines I'm turning out are all drinkable. They all seem to be anyway. I'm fortunate that my wife, Deborah, has a very good palate. She has nothing to do with the winemaking, really, but her perception of aromas and taste is certainly much better than mine. She can tell me a lot of things that I can't pick up. And every winemaker does want feedback, actually, and we want honest feedback. We always tell people that. Tell me what you think. Don't tell me what I want to hear necessarily. Really, what do you think of this wine? What are you getting out of this wine?
That's great. That is really the truth in the creative process, isn't it?
You're looking for that, yes, because there, as you mentioned, there's art and science, and it is definitely a balance of both. It's just not all one way.
Excellent. Good. You know, Chuck, because you are making grapes here, you're not selling your wine. If people want to learn about how you do what you do, what are the associations that you're involved with, what would be the website for them to learn about that?
WisconsinHomeWinemakers.com, WIHomeWinemakers.com. That would take them to the Wisconsin Vintners Association.
Excellent. Chuck, it's a beautiful day. We got a lot of wind. We got a few trucks. We got a couple of airplanes. But we also have some beautiful grapes growing in the backyard. I can't thank you enough for taking the time.
You're welcome. It's been my pleasure. Happy to have you out here.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
Learn more by visiting WisconsinHomeWineGrowers.com.
for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Copyright 2020.